Good afternoon and welcome to another Good News Show with your host, Danielle Smith. I pray you're having a blessed and wonderful day. Well, you know, the gospel of Jesus Christ is the good news. So what we do on this show is we are telling good news stories. We're spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ by telling good news stories. Most of you may know that, yes, I am from Pittsburgh, but I recently relocated to the Nashville, Tennessee area. So I'm also going to be reaching out to individuals in this area to tell good news stories about what's going on in Nashville, Pittsburgh. I love my city of Pittsburgh. And of course, I'm still going to be interviewing people in the city of Pittsburgh. But today I have an opportunity to speak with a presenter, a producer, and a journalist. And you won't believe it. She's from the United Kingdom. I mean, this is an awesome opportunity to get the opportunity to speak with her. I met her recently through another individual that I met on LinkedIn. His name is Mr. James Toussaint. I interviewed Mr. Toussaint at the beginning of the year. We talked about the new Haiti enterprise and what he's doing for Haiti and how he's making a positive impact and a difference in that country. So on today's Good News Show, I'm speaking to Ms. Audrey Hall. She's a presenter, a producer, and a journalist. She was honored in 2021 for the Community Radio Award, presenter, producer, with an extensive radio portfolio, including 13 years at the BBC, 2 years at network presenter Jazz FM, plus 8 years in network and regional television, social commentary, passionate about music, and an expert in MOBO. We're going to ask her what that means, MOBO and jazz vibe. So, of course, she has this extensive bio, and I was just going to take a little bit out of that bio to introduce her to the show today. Welcome, Audrey Hall, to Good News. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good, and what an absolute pleasure to join you.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you all the way from the United Kingdom. What's the weather like over there?
In actual fact, today, the sun is really shining and the temperature is quite warm. My husband would argue with you because, of course, I've got my heating on in the house because, of course, I'm black. So, of course, I need to be warm. So, you know, the heating's still on, Shea Audrey Hall, but the weather here today actually is really nice.
Wonderful. So per your bio, you've lived in Manchester since you were 4 years old. What's it like living there? Now, you haven't lived anywhere else, am I correct? You haven't been to the United States. So how is it like living over there as an African-American? Oh, wait, I couldn't say you're an African-American. How's it like living over there?
They call us here African-Caribbean. Okay. And, you know, it's a really interesting question, Danielle, because I was born in England. My mum was one of the people from Jamaica who came over. She came over in 1955.
Okay.
Followed very quickly by my dad. But my mum came here on a nursing scholarship. She was one of the people who answered the call. You know, the mother country is calling. It wanted the people from the Commonwealth to come and help to rebuild the UK. So my mum was one of those people. And this is before Windrush. You'll have heard of Windrush. That was Windrush was 1948. My mum's 1955.
Okay.
But the interesting thing is I was brought up English. I wasn't brought up black. Now, okay. This might sound a little bit strange to you, but basically we didn't live in a black community. I didn't go to a school that was heavily populated with black children. I think my family was the only black family at that school. Mm-hmm. And we didn't live in a black area. And that, interestingly enough, was a conscientious decision of my parents. Whilst they both worked and fed into the black community in terms of youth clubs and community groups and organizing the West Indian Organizing Committee, they chose not to live there. Now, the reason this is significant, Danielle, is my world changed on the 25th of May, 2020, when mm-hmm. George Floyd was murdered.
Yes.
And I spent a year examining the implications about that murder. We can call it a murder now, of course, you know, for the first however many months we weren't allowed to call it a murder, although we Black people, we always knew it was a murder. But it changed things so much, it put things into such different perspective. And for the first time, I was feeling almost as though I needed to justify who and what I was. So a very interesting journey in terms of understanding what that was all about. And I did program after program. I did discussion panels. I had this person, that person, the other person talking, without realizing that what I was actually going through was something called Black trauma. And how could I, aged 60 years old, Danielle, had never heard of this thing called Black trauma? And I'm serious, I'd never heard of it. I had been living it, I'd been struggling with this thing, but I didn't know it had a title and I didn't know the reasons why. So it's a very long answer to a question, but what's it like living in Manchester? Living in Manchester is okay. But identity, belonging, race, racism, the reality of life as a Black person living in Britain is interesting, and I talk about it all the time.
Yeah, good. It's of course a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm so glad that we got the opportunity to connect. So growing up, you went to high school there. Of course, you went to elementary school, you went to high school, you went on to college. When you went on to college, did you know that you were going to get into journalism and radio and television?
No, it's my second career. My first career was insurance. So I left school and went to work in insurance because I knew, and this just goes to show, you know, you thought you were sort of worldly wise at age 16. I went to a grammar school. So for a start, it was unusual to leave at age 16 because everybody did A-levels and then went on to do university. I'd already decided I was going the business route because my brother was doing it. So I was going to get a job and I was going to study at the same time. So I took myself off and I started working insurance. And I actually did insurance for the first part of my career. And I ended up as an associate of the Chartered Insurance Institute. So I qualified. I did new business and that was my last job, and then got married and had a baby and left work. So broadcasting was my second career. And it was after being at home for a couple of years, listening to radio, watching a lot of television. And I used to listen to these people and I used to think, I could do that. I can do that.
Yes.
And then in 1989, a revolutionary thing happened in Manchester in that a gentleman going by the name of Mike Shaft decided to launch the first Black-owned, community radio station. It was a Black-owned radio station. It was a commercial radio station. Okay. So, you know, it comes under like the community, but we were actually paid when we worked there. And that was my first job. And, you know, I started off there and then, you know, I'd been there for 2 minutes before I decided that the BBC was for me and took myself off to the BBC. And then, you know, then what did I do? Met the head of the BBC who told me about the bursary, Granada Television bursary. Because the first thing that he said to me is, you've got to be qualified as a journalist. And I said, oh, I've done loads of interviews. And he said, how many have you done, Audrey? You know, by this stage, Danielle, you know, I mean, I don't know. Oh, I've done 250. He said, oh, very good. And our journalist did 250 last week. What you need to do, Audrey, I mean, obviously he was saying it for the effect, but what you need to do, you need to get qualified. And there's a bursary from Granada Television. I think you should take a look and apply. And I applied and I won. So I actually started, my career started, you know, if you like, in a, if you want to call it that, a blaze of glory. And I did very well across radio and television until I was diagnosed with MS. And that was December in 2003.
Yes. So up until that point, of course, you had you still continue to have a successful career in broadcasting. And I usually ask this question at the end of the interview, but I'm going to ask it now. What advice would you give to another person, such as a young person, that what advice would you give to that young person that will want to pursue a career in broadcasting?
Do it. Don't ask anybody. Just do it. I have spent the last 3 years, Danielle, I spent 13 years working at the BBC. And because, you know, and I'm going to refer to George Floyd, because what happened, there was this outpouring with every industry saying, oh, we're going to redress diversity and inclusion. When I said to you that I never stopped talking about what happens to Black people, the reality of life for Black people in Britain is we fare worse in every aspect of society. So housing, education, opportunity, the criminal justice system, healthcare, it goes on and on and on. So that isn't anything new. What I do is I like to talk. When I say I like to talk about it, it's not with a guilt thing. It's like, this is the news and this is the reality for us. You know, I don't do it in the feel sorry for Black people. It's no. This is what the story is. This is what the implications of that story is. And this is what the reality of it is for us. And inevitably, sadly, it's different. So I spent 13 years working for the BBC. And because of the stuff that I do, because of the topics that I cover, I believe that that needs, in inverted commas, a serious broadcaster, somebody who's properly interested in speech. I don't know what it's like in the States, but in the UK now, it's all sort of high fives and, you know, cartoons and getting down, and it's a huge focus towards sort of young. So I'm sort of saying the 35-year-old-ish in terms of what the youth culture is. When what I'm saying is, do you know what? That's important, and we're delighted to see that, but that's not all there is to us. And actually, there's a whole serious narrative that is going on. I call it grown-up broadcasting, with people like me, where we're talking about things that concern us. And as I say, we're not doing it in an accusatory matter. This is telling it as it is. I wasted 3 years asking permission for the BBC to, you know, I wanted them to employ me. So talking to everybody, but everybody, idea after idea, you know what the score is. You can't just have a conversation. You're giving of yourself. And obviously, you know, there's nothing that's unique. It's your application that makes it unique. But I spent 3 years talking, while everybody else spent time doing. And what that has done, it has meant that, you know, if you look at where am I 3 years, you know, we've had the pandemic, where am I? I'm still knocking on the door asking. Yes, I've won the award, and you know, I'm delighted that that is opening doors. People are now taking it, you know, a little bit more seriously. But Danielle, you know, for anybody who's been in broadcasting for a long time, and again, this was the sadness of the George Floyd, we're not saying anything that we've not been saying for years. Yes. The narrative that I'm talking about now is the same narrative as I was talking about when I started broadcasting in 1989. We Black people were still pushing. We're making waves. And I think what's happening now is that we're starting to take control. So my advice to the young person is to do it, do it. I think it's important, of course, to have qualifications and stuff behind you. But really, the way that things are happening these days, if you've got something to say, you've got to get out there and say it and do it, because that's what everybody else is. But remember, you're up against Oprah and you're up against Barack Obama. These are now all our chat show hosts. So, you know, you've got to make sure that whatever it is that you've got to say is something that needs to be said. And therein lies another problem. You know, I love your show, Danielle. You know, you're telling good news. You have a hook. You have a hook to bring people in, because actually life is so dour that it's great to hear good news. But good news doesn't necessarily have to be all dressed up, all smiley, happy, clappy, because I think what I'm doing is actually delivering good news.
Yeah.
It's the reality. It's the truth.
Yes, you're right. You're right about that. Great advice giving that to the young people and everybody that want to get into the industry. And yes, you are telling good news. So I'm glad that you are continuing to do what you do today on the radio in the UK, telling your stories. I listened to part of your interview with James Toussaint and you play this music. Tell us about your show and that you do the music in the beginning. You have this awesome music that you're playing and then you're interviewing your person in between the music. Tell us your rundown of the day and how you put your show together.
My rundown of the day. If only it was a day, Danielle. I will tell you the concept of the music. And again, you know, you will smile. I'm into music. So you say, what is Mobo? So Mobo was is music of Black origin, which you and I know we would say is every single piece of music, incidentally, because that is the argument, you know, of course, is that's where music started. But I'm into music of the jazzy vibe. So obviously I'm talking about, you know, your people from your Duke Ellington to your Miles Davis, to your John Coltrane, to your Sarah, to your Ella, to you, and it goes on and on and on to all of the cool guys. I'm heavily, if you see my playlist, you'll see I'm digging what's going on in the States.
And yes, very, you are.
Very, very much. But what I do, I like to use my music to help to tell the story. So the tracks that I choose somehow complement or illustrate or highlight my guest or the story. So say, for example, if I had you on the program and you were talking about good news, trust me, I would have half a dozen tracks that were all about them, all uplifting, looking up, complimentary, you know, all about good news, telling us that it's going to be all right, because that's what I can do. And actually, whilst it might sound like it's hard, it actually makes it easier because it brings it in. Because if you can imagine what the jazzy vibe palette is like, plus I like soul, I like rhythm and blues, I like reggae, yes. I like Afrobeat, so, and I'm greedy. So if you imagine what that palette is like, it is huge. So I have to say, okay, today we're looking at good news. We're going to do that. Do you know what? Deli Sassimi, he has a record called Too Much Information. I'm going to play that when it's Danielle's show, because that's all about too much information and Danielle's all about good news.
Yes.
And so on and so forth. So that's what I do. But I take great pleasure in being able to play this music. And of course, you know, people go, oh, I don't like jazz. And Black people are going, I don't like jazz. Now, I say the people who are saying I don't like jazz, they don't actually know what they're saying, because it's such a familiar music. It's in everybody's psyche that actually, you know, they're hearing a track and then thinking, they're not thinking that's jazz. They're just thinking, oh, that's I'm Mad About the Boy, or At Last, or that's whatever it is. They're not thinking, oh, that's a, you know, a really important jazz classical standard. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody does know it and I think everybody does love it. But what I also say is, open your mind, because it's a beautiful music. If you like per se, and you like instrumentals and you like classical music, there's something in there for you. And hopefully that's what I hope that I convey a little bit of my passion for the music. But I mean, last week I was talking about Questlove winning the BAFTA for Summer of Soul. I talked about it on the show 2 weeks before. He wins a BAFTA last week. I could talk about it on the show again. But he does exactly with Summer of Soul what I do with the show, which is he tells the stories around the music. So he had the artist to tell the stories around the tracks. That's what I do. I'm telling
nice.
And the telling it as it is came from, basically, it came out of Brexit, actually, and then Trump. And I'm sure that you would have noticed that the narrative changed massively. And, you know, we allowed a vocabulary in that would never have been allowed before. But because it was politicians and premiers and you know, presidents indeed using this sort of language. It somehow normalized it and said it was okay. Daniel, it was never okay. It was never okay by me. And then also we had Brexit, and, you know, use whatever description you like. Brexit, as far as I'm concerned, was about immigration. And it was about trying to stop people having jobs. It was that same old, you know, these people are coming here taking our jobs. It wasn't necessarily directed directly towards Black people. It was towards Eastern Europeans as well. But trust me, racism increased with Brexit massively. The reason that I'm telling it as it is what I want to know, Danielle, is, okay, that's the headline, but what does it mean to you? How is it going to affect you? Because once I understand what it means to you and how it's going to affect you, then it probably will bear resonance with me as, you know, a similar, strong Black female.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
This is the show. So this is the Music Magazine show. It is. I mean, I started off with it being a 2-hour show. And the reason it's a 1-hour show is because I am developing the podcast, and the podcast is to run alongside the radio show.
Okay.
So the idea is that the podcast, and this is what I'm going to be putting my energies into in the next couple of months, because I've got so many of them. I've got them from September, and it's really interesting because we're kind of going on a journey. And the idea is that all of my interviews will be lifted out and they will become podcasts. And what I've been, you know, agonizing over, Danielle, is how best to describe me without turning off half the population.
That's not true. There's no really? Way that can happen.
Really? Really? So what do I do? Do I go out and do I have on my first line that this is racially informed social commentary, which is what I thought I wanted to say? And then I sent that in an email to somebody yesterday, and then he wrote back to me and he said, I didn't know your show was all about this. And it's like, well, that's what my show's always been around. It's racially informed because I'm a Black woman. That's all it means, you know. But I mean, I'm sort of thinking to myself, honestly, I want it to be, I say that it's of interest to all. You know, I've done a demarcation now where I've said I am celebrating the role that people over 50 are playing in society, because inevitably the people who are running things are 50 years old. And the idea is that, you know, and God has told us this, we don't have to rip up and start all over again. We need to build on the foundations of those who have gone before us. And yes, what I'm saying is we've been here, you know, we've been there, we've done that, we've worn the T-shirt, and indeed we're still wearing the T-shirt. Take from us and take that forward to make it all into a better day. That's surely what, you know, we're all about.
Yes, yes, yes. Of course, of course. One of the topics that Mr. James Toussaint told me that I needed to talk to you about, or he recommended that I get your opinion on this, is what's your thoughts on the Supreme Court hearings that are now going on for the confirmation of Ketanji Jackson, who is potentially would be the first Black woman on the Supreme Court?
I would take a step back and say, I think it's a similar answer to the answer that I gave you before, which is, and it sounds almost crass to say that any improvement, any advancement, anything that we get, we are delighted at and with, whether it's in the United States of America, whether it's in Haiti, whether it's in Africa, whether it's in the United Kingdom. The thing that I was most impressed by was to hear from James that he believes that the Renaissance in Haiti will come from women, at the hands of women. You know, again, I can't profess to being privy to budgets, but to me it seems pretty simple. What is going on in Haiti, I think, is an outrage and a disgrace, not just to Haiti, Danielle, I think to the world. We've seen how the world has come and unified around what is happening in Ukraine with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Now, that kind of humanitarian effort, that kind of humanitarian support, I believe is needed for all displaced people. So I was delighted for my second International Women's Day program to feature James Toussaint. And what we talked about last week was the fact that he is saying that he wants women to rule the world. He sees that salvation will come when women rule the world. He says it's our time, that is New Haiti's time. He thanked all of the gentlemen for all of the work that they'd done, but their time was gone. And he says that the only way that things are going to go forward is with women at the helm. And me personally, what do I say? Amen.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen. Amen to that. You kind of mentioned Ukraine and Russia. And yes, of course, we know that that is still going on and we're not really sure when that's going to end. Have you had the opportunity to speak to any Ukrainians, Blacks that live in Ukraine about the situation? Because I have seen on the news here and in the United States that when they were allowing people to leave the country, that they were holding the Black folks back from leaving the country.
It's true. And, you know, when I say it's true, they were the news reports. And, you know, people go further than that, Danielle, and they say that there is this outpouring of sympathy because basically people haven't got brown and Black faces. You know, I didn't want to get into that with James. Whether I think it's true or not, I'm sure from what I've already told you, you can guess.
Yes.
My place at a broadcaster is not to say that. My place at a broadcaster is to use the line, which is the line that I used last week, which is our hearts go out to the people of the Ukraine, but especially, and then we go through LGBTQ people, women, and people of colour who have not found it easy to get sanctuary. That's what I said.
Yes,
and that is the truth. And the reasons as to why, I'm sorry, it's inherent racism. It's get the Blacks off the buses. It's you know, it's as I was saying to you, you know, when I, this whole George Floyd thing and me understanding what's going on doesn't happen in, you know, 2020. It goes back all the 500 years. It goes back the thousands of years. We're talking about generational discrimination. We are talking about the fact that we are a people who were taken from our home to wherever. This has been our life, and our life all the way through has been all about, you know, James said it in an interview when he did the Martin Luther King piece with me, and I had to correct him. You know, he did a brilliant testimony and he's like, blah blah blah, this is fantastic and we're one people together and blah blah blah, and we need to sit together at the table and you know, we need to be treated as equals. And I said, James, your testimony was great until your last line. We don't need to be treated as equal, James. We are equals. And this is the problem, that here we are, Danielle. We're still in, you know, we're in what year are we now? 2022.
Yeah.
And we're still saying, treat us as equals. It's nonsense. We are equals. Where did this thing come in as we're not equal? Why are people who have a different hue suddenly not equal? We know why. It's called colonialism, it's called imperialism, and it's called, you know, as I say, it's sadly inherent racism. And we're not talking about, you know, a little bit of something here and there. This is why this whole idea of redressing diversity and inclusion by, you know, putting on television, you know, a whole load more Black people, it's great in terms of representation and saying, yeah, there's a lot more Black people. This is representative of the area in which we serve. But that's not solving inherent racism. The inherent racism is only going to be solved when you actually go into the part, you know, part and fabric of society at the very top and break down those institutions and look at who is in charge and why and how. and so on. And you know, Danielle, I don't know what the situation is in the United States, but certainly if you're talking about in the United Kingdom, if you're talking about who is at chief executive level or above, it is pitiful. And I mean pitiful. It's improving, but it's still pitiful. So we're not the people in control. We're not the people in charge. We're not the people in charge of the banks. We're not the people who are commissioning the television programs. We're not the people, which is why this whole thing about asking permission needs to stop. And we do need to now take control. But Danielle, I've told you, I'm 62. Do you think I wanted to sit here and think to myself, oh, it's time for me now to launch a business for myself? No, I just wanted to have a job the same as everybody else. But that, you heard what I've just said. I just wanted to have a job the same as everybody else. But that was not and has not been afforded to me. So doing it this way, taking control and doing it myself feels so much better. And it's so good.
You are doing an awesome job on your own, doing it yourself. And you're doing the interviews. You're talking about the topics that need to be talked about that you may not always hear in mainstream media. That's the pleasure. That's the blessing of doing it on your own, because you get to tackle those topics. You get to talk to those people that you wouldn't, may not necessarily be able to talk to in mainstream media if you were working at the BBC or some other television station. But you're moving ahead. You're doing your thing. You're doing great work there. And we, of course, appreciate you taking out the time and speaking with us. Before I go, I got to ask, you mentioned about racism, and I know we could talk a long time about racism. And what would you say, very shortly, what the solution is to racism? And it could be a racism there, racism in America. I won't give my opinion, but I'll ask you, what do you think is the solution to racism?
Stop pretending not to see color. You need to see us. You need to see us, and you need to let us be. You need to let us express ourselves. You know, Danielle, women trying to express themselves, me speaking to you on this interview, you know, who is this raving activist? Who is this person with a chip on a shoulder? Who is this aggressive person? No, I'm just articulating exactly the reality of our lives. So let us be.
Yes.
Stop pretending that there isn't color, because there is. But understand that our reality is not the same as your reality. And you know something? In terms of commerce, I did employee comms and internal comms and external comms communications. And the thing that you learn immediately is how things are different when people feel involved, when somebody buys into somebody's idea, when somebody is engaged, when somebody is valued, when somebody is recognized. You know, that little well done, that little opening of the mind to think, well, do you know what? This has always been done from a Eurocentric perspective. Let's have a look at it from the African perspective. I don't think things are any better in America, incidentally. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I hear, I have a nephew living there and I don't hear things any better. So that's what I would say. I would say, acknowledge who we are, see us.
Yes.
And then allow us to express ourselves and take on board the things that we're saying to help inform what you do and how you do things and change things going forward. You must have Black people at senior hiring levels.
Yes.
You must.
Awesome. Awesome. You're an awesome interviewer. You've done an awesome job. You, of course, are a radio person, and I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your information here with Good News in Pittsburgh. And of course, we're around the country as well, because people can always hear us on the internet now. But you are an awesome woman, and I just appreciate your time. And I know that there's a difference in the hours between us talking this morning. And I just want to tell you, thank you. Continue to do what you do. because you're doing great at it. You're making that positive impact. You're spreading the good news. You're talking about those topics that need to be discussed. And we don't know all the plans that the Lord has for you, but I believe that he has some great plans for you, plans to prosper you and give you an expected end. That's what he does. And you know, I'm just excited for you. I'm just excited, first of all, to be talking to you. I'm just excited to be talking to you and to learn all these interesting things about you and as a presenter, as a producer, as a journalist. And I'm just glad you're here. I'm just glad that we had the opportunity to speak and to talk about your show. I did listen into your show, and I'm going to make sure I send share your link on my Facebook page so other people can go and listen as well, because I love the music that you play and you get that music plan and you're getting into your interview. You introduce a person that you're going to talk to, but you don't bring them in right away. You let the music still play.
No. I've got to tease it along. You know, you said one thing and two things I must come back to you on. Number one, I have been writing to my, I have a mentor. I have a few mentors actually, but yes, this one in particular I wrote to yesterday, and I've had to give it to God. I've had to, you know, absolutely let go and let God. But most recently I've been show me, and I wrote to my mentor yesterday. I know he's listening because her mum's poorly and she's poorly, so you know, I was sort of praying for her and praying for mum. Yeah, I said, I know he's listening, but I'm just not sure what he's telling me. I've asked him to show me. I'm not sure what he's telling me, because I've had two really not very nice things happen this week. So that's that. So I'm with you. I'm waiting for him to show me. But the other thing that you said when you were talking about it being, I would almost say it is almost our duty to help those coming up behind us. You would think that that happened as a matter of course. Post George Floyd, when I went out to people, I got zero response back from the people I went to. It was almost this, I call it this small town mentality. You know, I've got this and you know, I've got so little, I've got to hold on to it this tight because I couldn't possibly let you in because, you know what, you might be better than me. Do you know what, Danielle? I want somebody coming behind me who's better than me. That's the person I want who's helping me, because they're the people who are going to say, hang on a minute, Audrey, have you thought through this? Have you thought through that? You don't want a patsy. You don't want somebody who is just going to agree with you. You want somebody to inspire and challenge you. So that, you know, when you were saying about doing the racism thing, there's a bit that can happen in the wider world, but there's stuff that we have to do ourselves, Danielle. And that this town ain't big enough for both of us mentality has got to stop, because it is. The world is big enough. I'm delighted. I'm talking to Danielle Smith today. I'm on your show next week. What could be better? What could be better?
Yes, you're right. I'll put it this way. In my career coming up in radio, in journalism, I've had some great people that have inspired me to be great. My mentor that I have for some years, he passed away last year. I have another mentor, Mr. Chris Moore, but my mentor that actually worked with the radio station, and he was the general manager of the radio station, Bishop Lauren Mann, here in Pittsburgh, he passed away. But through the years that I've been in the industry and in the business, I have had people inspire me to say, hey, girl, you got to keep on going, keep on moving, keep on doing your thing. And then there's other people, I'm going to tell you, they'll say they want you to be successful, but they don't. You can tell by their reaction. You can tell by when you're talking to them. You can tell by, you ever meet somebody that says, oh, I'll help you. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then when you call them, you can't find them. Yeah. Or when you talk to them on the phone and they'll say, oh yeah, I got so-and-so. I'm going to hook you up with so-and-so. And you never hear from so-and-so.
Yes.
That is the type of person that I had to pray about and tell God that he needs to give me discernment and tell me who it is that I should connect with and who it is that I shouldn't connect with. Because every body and this industry is not going to help you. That is what I had to learn. And I had actually learned that the hard way, that everybody's not going to help you. There are some good people. They will help you get to the next level. They will help you to be successful in this, because you can't do it on your own. That's the one thing that you need to know, that you know you're not going to be successful on your own. Somebody's got to help you get there. I heard Bishop T.D., I'm sure you know who Bishop T.D. Jakes is in Texas. And I heard him preach one time, and he always has a good message, but he preached one time and he talked about climbing up the ladder and somebody trying to get you down the ladder and trying to pull you down the ladder. But he said, there's always going to be somebody helping you to get up the ladder. You cannot do it yourself. And I've heard that time and time again, that you need people to help you, but you got to pray for discernment. You got to ask God, who is it that I should talk to? Because I've had that happen to me time and time again, but I trusted God that it was going to work out. With God, all things are possible. You are an award-winning journalist, and that is because of the Lord. So I just wanted to share that with you, that all things are possible. And if you feel that you have outgrown where you are, it may be time for you to take a leap of faith.
It is. I think what I'm going to do and what I must do, Danielle, I can interview people anyway. So, you know, I don't know whether people are letting me interview them because they want Audrey Hall to interview them, or whether they want to go on All FM. All FM is a community radio show.
Yes.
The beauty of keeping All FM, I kind of like it because it lets me play my jazz. It lets me still play music. So it does both bits of my offering, if you like. But I think what I need to do, well, not I think, I know what I'm going to do, is I'm going to take probably a couple of months off so that I can get the podcast up running from All FM. There's also a question mark about whether or not I have some serious surgery as well this year. So there's lots of things going on. But basically, I can't do the other stuff that I need to do whilst I'm doing the weekly show, because I put so much into doing the weekly show, Danielle. So
now, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview about the MS.
Yeah.
And how old were you when you were diagnosed with MS?
It was 2003. So however, I can't remember. I was 30. I was 39.
So how has it affected you on a day-to-day? Because just by looking at you and hearing that show and what
I'm a sexy, I'm a sexy,
I was going to say, yeah. Me personally, I can say that it has not had a huge effect on you. And I don't know personally if it has, but you still doing your thing, girl.
I was told, my original mentor, Rajwant Baines, when I found out I had MS, I told her, and she told me on day one, you must not let your illness define you. You are not MS. Now, that is really harsh to hear on day one. I didn't know what I was doing with MS. I basically have relapsing remitting. So I'm not great. It's managed by medication. It used to be injected. Thank God now it's oral medication. Lifestyle and a positive mental attitude, but I also have a problem with my back, and the thing that I'm having, what they're talking about doing now, is an instrumented fusion. So it's where they sort of rebuild up your back, and my discs don't work properly, and it's a longer story. But basically, I'm a chronic pain sufferer, and I've got multiple sclerosis, and we lost our son in 2019, the end of January 2019, and he was aged 32, and that's after 15 years of him being mentally ill. We had 2 years at the end where we believed, I believe we had the best years ever, where Dan was living independently, but he, for whatever reason, it was not meant to be. And it is broadcasting that has actually got me through, Danielle. It kept me with a passion and a purpose, and especially because you know, I say it's not about me. You know your show is about you, but it's not about me because you're facilitating other stories. So that's what broadcasting. So if I was ever unsure of whether or not I wanted to do it or not, losing Daniel made me think, yes, you do. And it also made me, you know, remember my dad's favorite phrase, which is, you know, the only sure thing in life is death. And therefore, you must make sure you live every single day as though it's your last. And that was my dad's favorite saying. And, you know, I am basically the age that I am. I believe I'm a great broadcaster. It's what I did before I met Adrian. I stopped because I was diagnosed with MS. Sorry, I didn't explain, but I stopped when I was diagnosed with MS and the BBC wanted me to sign a ridiculous contract, which, you know, again, with hindsight, I said no. With hindsight, I'd have signed anything. But, you know, I'm sort of thinking that I'm somebody and I have friends in, but you have nobody. The one thing that I know, Danielle, is, you know, I don't have anybody. And that thing that you said, you can't do it on your own, that is the thing that I have become painfully aware of. So even though I'm not earning any money, I'm about to now start paying out to get people to help me to do what I'm doing. Because if I'm going out there and saying I'm serious and this is who I am and here I am and here's my podcast, I want it done properly. I don't want it done stupid. I want it done properly. So I'm going to do it properly. So I think what I will do is, you know, I don't really need to give them any hard and fast decision at All FM, but it's not really fair. But I think I need a couple of months, and that's what I intend to do. I'm going to probably do, you know, I've got the show in April with Unisa, which is the last, in inverted commas, proper one that I've got booked in. April is Marvin Gaperl, you know, so I have to do my Marvin. He's my man. So Marvin, Miles and Stevie. So if you have any connection, if you can do anything for me, if you know Stevie Wonder, if you know my love for him, if you can grant me one wish. James is already praying. I told him he's not praying hard enough. So he's already praying. He's so funny. He's so gracious. Isn't he the most adorable, just gorgeous, gorgeous man that you could wish to meet? I mean, we have quite a relationship. I mean, I've told him off this week about something and he's sort of gone, yes, Audrey, you know. I don't mean told him off, but I've sort of said it's not what I was expected, you know. And he knows I'm working hard and, you know, he sees me writing to him at ridiculous o'clock and he writes to me at ridiculous o'clock and he knows it's me on my own. But honestly,
I don't know Stevie Wonder, but I would love to meet Stevie Wonder. I haven't interviewed him. I've interviewed quite a few people, but Stevie Wonder, I do know somebody that knows Stevie Wonder.
There you go, you see.
Yeah, I do know somebody that I know a woman that I used to work with. Actually, we were colleagues when I worked for the American Urban Radio Networks in Pittsburgh, and she lives in Hollywood, and she does stars. She interviews superstars. She does a show called Hollywood Live. I'll have to send you a link to one of her shows. She goes to the same church as Stevie Wonder.
Well, she needs and to
she goes to the same church as Stevie Wonder. And it's funny because the pastor of their church used to be the bishop of the International Church of God in Christ, which I'm a member of the Church of God in Christ. And he came to Pittsburgh in 2012, and I had an opportunity to interview the pastor of their church in Los Angeles. So I do know somebody that knows
you're making little things. Well, the reason it has to be not you is because I have loved Stevie. And James will tell you there's a really nice piece in the recording where I talk about Stevie Wonder, but I have loved him since being 11 years old, and I say he taught me all there is to know about love and life and the world.
Yeah.
And I call him the natural wonder. You will find that inevitably nearly every other show there will be something of his there, and that's been the way it's been since I started broadcasting in 1989. So Stevie owes me. My sisters have met him, and when my sisters met him, they said, you know, Stevie, and they've got pictures with him. It's like, well, we're here talking to you, but actually it's Audrey who you need to be talking to, because she's the real one. But honestly, I can't, there aren't words without making me sound like I'm an idiot to explain just how much that man means to me. I think he's blessed. I think
yes,
he's
he is.
And you know, I'm sorry, but you know, what I'm doing is I'm looking at all of our American greats and I'm like, they're not going to be with us for much longer. I want to talk to all of these people. Why can't yes. somebody give me a show and let me talk to all of them? Because you know how people respond to Black people. You know it's different, don't you, Danielle? You mm-hmm. know it's different. Me doing an interview with Stevie than somebody.
Well, we have to find out who Stevie Wonder's PR people are. And if we could find out if he has like a public relations person.
I had it and I wrote to it I'll find what I had and I'll send it to you as well, because I had it and wrote to it her and she completely ignored me. So, well, you know, I'm sure Stevie Wonder would love to have a British speaking sexy person like me playing jazz. You know, the short thing is thank you. That's what I'm looking for. I'm just looking to say thank you.
But of course, I appreciate you taking out the time and speaking with me on Good News. Before I let you go, where can the audience find you on social media?
Okay, on Facebook and Twitter, I am at Audrey Hall _. I'm also on LinkedIn and I'm also on Instagram.
Under Audrey Hall.
Okay, so the Facebook and Twitter at Audrey Hall _. And then I've got the show pages, Facebook show pages at Audrey's Late Night Drive.
Okay.
And also at Audrey's Early Drive, which is what it is now. And then the Instagram is _AudreyHallUK.
All right.
Return a compliment. Okay. Thank you very much for inviting.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a blessed day.
You too.
Thank you.
I've gone.
Bye.
What an interesting conversation I'm having today with my special guest on today's Good News Show, Audrey Hall, award-winning radio and television personality, presenter, and producer from Manchester, United Kingdom. So for more information on Audrey, make sure you visit her social media accounts, or you can send her an email at audrey@audreyhall.uk. She's also on LinkedIn at Audrey Hall. And then she has a Mixcloud account. You can go to the Mixcloud account and listen to any of her interviews on there. And it's www.mixcloud.com/Audrey's Late Night Drive. Again, I appreciate you taking out the time and listening to another Good News Show with your host, Danielle Smith. If you want to be featured on the show, make sure you send me your bio and your contact information to tvradiodiva@gmail.com. Have a blessed and wonderful day. Bye.